Today on the Health Report, could anxiety increase your risk of a stroke? We'll also look at one of the commonest causes of stroke, which you might never have heard of before, and a low-tech way of helping people with this condition. And should people who've never had heart disease be on daily low-dose aspirin to prevent a heart attack or stroke in the future? There are plenty of healthy people on daily aspirin, but are the benefits worth the risks? And do the possible benefits of aspirin in cancer prevention tip the balance in aspirin's favour? Well, a Japanese study published a couple of weeks ago in the Journal of the American Medical Association raised questions about the value of daily low-dose aspirin, at least for preventing heart disease. So what is the story? Should we or shouldn't we? An Australian researcher who's actually running one of the world's largest ever trials of aspirin as prevention is Mark Nelson, who's Professor of General Practice at the University of Tasmania. I asked Mark what he thought of the Japanese study and where that leaves us poor punters wanting to live forever in the pink of health.
That was a randomised open label study done in the Japanese population, patients aged 60 years and above, and they were looking at cardiovascular outcomes, heart attacks and stroke prevention.
And it was primary prevention, meaning they'd never had any heart problems before.
That's right.
And you were just trying to prevent their first event, whether that be angina, a heart attack, or needing some cardiac procedure.
Exactly. It was actually an open label, so patients knew they were on aspirin versus no aspirin, because apparently, culturally, the Japanese can't do placebo-controlled trials.
And what did they find?
Essentially no difference, but what actually happened was that they accumulated very few events over the average 5 years of the study, and hence their data safety and monitoring board simply stopped the study due to futility. The Japanese population generally have a lower prevalence of coronary artery disease than the Western population, so they just had too few events to show anything.
Okay, so you'd say it was inconclusive because it just didn't go long enough and get enough data to be sure.
Exactly, yes. No, it was a no-difference study, but there weren't enough events accumulated over time to actually show if there was a difference or not.
And was there any harm in the study?
There was some evidence of major bleeding. There was some evidence about prevention of coronary artery events and also prevention of TIAs, but overall, no benefit.
TIAs being transient ischemic attacks.
Transient ischemic, yeah, threatened strokes, yes.
So where does this sit now? We'll come to your study in a minute. Where do we sit now in terms of people taking low-dose aspirin on a day-by-day basis? Because I thought that the balance of evidence was that if you haven't had a heart attack or a stroke, because that's not under debate. If you've had a heart attack or a stroke or you've got diabetes, aspirin helps.
Not necessarily with diabetes in the primary prevention group. You're correct. On secondary prevention, if you've had a heart attack and stroke, the most solid evidence, meta-analyses and systematic reviews of properly designed and conducted randomized controlled trials show it's a lay-down misere, you should be taking aspirin. In the primary prevention group, we still have this equipoise, is that, for example, you mentioned diabetes. It was always assumed that people who had diabetes in the primary prevention who already hadn't had a heart attack or stroke would have similar risk to those who were non-diabetic in the secondary prevention.
So just before we go galloping on here, so what we're saying here is because diabetes puts you at such high risk of a heart attack or stroke, it was assumed that if you were, for example, to take aspirin, it would confer the same benefits as if you'd already had a heart attack or stroke.
That's correct, yes. People who have diabetes generally don't die of the complications of diabetes of the sugar, but of the classical risk factors. They have heart attacks and strokes. About 60 to 70% of them die of what are called macrovascular events, which are heart attacks and strokes. But recent studies have shown that in primary prevention in diabetes also, there was no benefit.
So is there any evidence at the moment for taking aspirin? We'll come to cancer in a moment, but aspirin to prevent heart disease if you've not had an event?
There is some evidence. There have been six major primary prevention studies conducted over the last 20 years. Meta-analysis of those suggests that there's probably some benefit for high-risk males, middle-aged males, for coronary artery disease events. And for women postmenopausal or in the older age groups for the risk of stroke. But the problem is, of course, is that it's not just the benefit side of the ledger. You've got to look at all clinical trials that have been run do show that aspirin causes adverse events, and those are bleeding events.
But mainly in the first year or two of use, is my understanding.
Well, it's like anything. If you're going to have a side effect of a drug, you tend to get it early.
Okay, the jury's out. Maybe it's worth doing if you've got high cholesterol and you're a smoker and you're getting on a bit. And again, we will come back to your study in a minute. What about cancer prevention?
Well, the cancer study, when we started looking at designing our own study, is that when we were looking at expanding it above and beyond coronary artery and cerebrovascular events, that's heart attack and stroke prevention, there was some very good evidence coming out about randomized controlled trials of secondary prevention of polyps after people had already had a polyp or if they'd had a bowel cancer. So suggesting that if you take aspirin, that you could prevent the recurrence of the polyps, and the polyps are the intermediate step between no cancer and developing cancer. So there has been some evidence about that, and there's been some very good work done out of the Oxford group who have done meta-analyses showing a pretty good reliable evidence that aspirin, if it's taken long term, certainly longer than 5 years, probably 10 years, may be able to prevent the major, especially gastrointestinal cancers. And as Australia has a very high rate of colorectal cancer, that's a very interesting finding.
And there's also some evidence that if you're on aspirin and you develop cancer, treatment goes better for you.
Yes, there is. There are often observational studies. I don't do research in the cancer side of it, but my understanding is that they are currently doing randomized controlled trials of using aspirin as an adjunct therapy on top of other therapies that they're using, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, surgery, etc., because there's some evidence that it may prevent metastases, which is spread throughout the body, for example.
Okay, tell me about your study.
Well, our study has been in the design probably for about 25 years. It takes that long to do.
25 years.
Yes, it takes that long to do public good.
But you're an expert research in these big, difficult studies to do for general practice, aren't you? You did the low blood pressure trial. Well, not low blood pressure, but the sort of moderate.
The second Australian National Blood Pressure Study, again conducted in Australian general practice between 1995 and 2001 and published in 2003, and involved 2,800 GPs, about 10% of the entire general practice workforce at the time. And we've now got 2,800 involved with our new study, which is called Esprit, which as of yesterday passed our recruitment number of 19,000. So we're now a study in the observational period time after all that time.
Who are you studying and what are you trying to look for?
Well, the recommendations that guidelines make about using aspirin in primary prevention, that is people who have never had a heart attack or stroke, is based on what's called absolute risk. And this would seem to be a pretty good rationale. What absolute risk is, it's the risk of you having a heart attack and stroke over a specified period of time. And here in Australia, we make that at 5 years. It's a way
of your personal risk.
Exactly. So you work it out using what's called an algorithm, which is a mathematical formula that adds up all of your risk factors to give you a global risk score. The whole idea is if you do have a high or very high risk of having a heart attack or stroke, it's likely that you have covert disease, that you do have coronary or cerebrovascular disease, but you just haven't had your first heart attack or stroke. And they're a very important group to deal with, because more heart attacks and strokes occur in the primary prevention population than in the secondary prevention population, because there are so many more people.
So the risk is lower, but the numbers are higher.
The numbers are much higher. So you'll prevent more strokes by looking at that primary prevention. So if you take that approach, the number one determinant of your risk of who's going to have a heart attack or stroke is your age. The older you are, the more likely you are to have a heart attack or stroke. We worked out that if you reach 70, if you're a male, you've got a 97% probability of meeting standards that would recommend the use of aspirin, and if you're female, a 49%. So it's almost the entire Australian population would qualify for aspirin. The problem being is that less than 10% of the people who are in those clinical trials that I spoke about earlier were in this age group. And typically what we do is we do clinical trials in middle-aged males and we give the drugs to elderly females. We should really do the research in the group to which they're applied. So looking at the 70-year-olds, the assumption is that the risk of heart attack and stroke goes up, and it certainly does, especially stroke. It rises exponentially over the age of 70, 75. But so also do the adverse effects of taking aspirin. And the one that is of major concern is bleeding into the brain, hemorrhagic type strokes, which generally are more likely to kill you and more likely to leave you disabled than the more common thromboembolic or clot strokes.
Which is what aspirin is designed to prevent.
That's right.
But because the bleeding ones are rarer, you're hoping for a balance of benefit overall.
Well, yeah, that's right. 85% of strokes are thromboembolic or clotting, and 15% are bleeding. So overall, you'll prevent more strokes. But we would argue that you need even to look further than just counting the number of events. You need to see how are people left after those events. And that's what's unique about our primary endpoint, which is what we're looking at is whether aspirin taken from the age of 70 years on makes you live longer, free of dementia and disability. So we want to see what people are like if they take aspirin and they do have a heart attack, or they avoid a heart attack, or if they have a bleeding stroke. How does it leave them after those events? Because ultimately that will predict who will remain healthy, living independently at home as they get older.
So you've got to follow them for a long time to find that out.
We do. We have to follow them for an average of 5 years for about 100,000 patient years of observation. We're probably around about 30,000 now. We've just completed the enrollment phase of the study, and now we have the long observational period.
And why dementia? Because dementia has a vascular component, and therefore if you're preventing clotting of the blood vessels, you're also preventing some vascular dementia?
Most diseases are associated with aging. So it's important if you do a prevention strategy in the elderly that's more holistic and looks at other disease processes. And the interesting thing is that like all diseases associated with aging, you often in dementia, you don't have pure forms of it. You don't have it as vascular dementia or a Alzheimer's type, is that they're often mixed. So in the end, we started with your suggestion, Norman, about looking at vascular type dementia, but in the end, we decided that we'd go for all-cause dementia. It's a common disease in the elderly, and I think if you spoke to any one of your listeners, they would say that's certainly something they want to avoid as they get older.
And you're looking at cancer too?
We're looking at cancer. We do what's called adjudicated events. We're actively looking for cancers because of that very good evidence about that aspirin may prevent cancer, and we're certainly following up on that. The interesting thing is about a third of our participants that we've enrolled in the study are actually cancer survivors. So you can look at this as it about two-thirds a primary prevention study for cancer and a one-third secondary prevention trial for cancer. It's really quite in fitting with the changes in the profile of what people are dying of in Australia now, because we've been very effective in lowering the risk factors for cardiovascular disease, especially smoking. People now are getting cardiovascular disease later, and if they do get it, medical interventions are so effective that they're living much longer with it. So you get the advantages of living longer because of those better management and treatments, but it means is that you'll get other diseases associated with aging.
So Mark, you're an academic general practitioner, you still see patients. A patient asks you, I'm thinking of taking low-dose aspirin, what do you think, doctor? What do you say?
As a routine, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's always knowing that individual, knowing their family history, their individual risk factor profile, all of these sort of things that is the advantage of having your own GP. So my answer would be is that no, I don't recommend it for all of my patients, but I may recommend it for certain individuals who may well benefit from it.
Yep. So in other words, if there was a strong family history, their years
smoker,
were advancing and they had risk factors.
That's right, correct.
So in summary then, if you've had a heart attack or stroke or a threatened stroke or a cardiac procedure, you need to be on low-dose aspirin, unless there's a very good reason not to. But the question then is, if you're pretty healthy, should you be on it? And that's a question that's still open. Would you like to reveal, Professor Mark Nelson, whether or not there's low-dose aspirin on your bathroom shelf?
Whether I take it on? No, I don't take it at the moment. I prefer the exercise route to prolongation of life.
Yes, just takes a bit longer than swallowing an aspirin. Look, thanks very much joining us on the Health Report.
No problems. Thank you, Norman.
Mark Nelson is Professor of General Practice at the University of Tasmania. Should I tell you what's on my bathroom shelf? Yes, I will. Yes, low-dose aspirin is on mine. But don't take that as any advice for you. You're listening to the Health Report here on RN with me, Norman Swan.